20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is currently right now as we record Saturday. It is 4:25 p.m. I am in the middle of watching the New England Patriots and the New York Giants take on each other in London, England. The Giants lead 17. Oh, this is baseball. So the Yankees are actually beating the Red Sox 17-13. And yes, you heard this right. That game started with a 6-run first inning for each of the two teams. And as you can see, the scoring has not slowed down since. That's not why we're here. I'm your host today. I am Jacob Westendorf, enjoying a beautiful Saturday. It is 90 degrees, which is kind of the norm where Jason's out at. But 90 degrees today, and just a beautiful day in the summer here right before the 4th of July. Joined with me, a recent birthday boy, Jason Perrone. How are you doing today?
I'm feeling a year older, and it's going to be about 110 out here today. So we're just a smidge warmer than that, but welcome to summer. I know those of you in the Midwest and on the East Coast have long awaited summer, and I'm very glad that it's here. Although, yeah, Jake, in looking at that baseball score for a second, I thought maybe my calendar was off. So it'll be interesting to see how that one ends. But it's getting me back into the mindset of football scores and football. And we're about a month away from training camp starting, so it's all good things for sure.
Yeah, less than a month as of today. Well, not as of today, but yeah, right now we're less than a month away from training camp starting. And the Packers, they'll begin training camp on July 25th. So talking football is certainly a positive thing. The basketball season is over, even though some people are worried about, you know, NBA free agency and stuff like that. There's no actual games being played, so it really is just baseball. Unless you're into the Women's World Cup that is going on, then you've got some soccer that you can certainly watch as well. But, yeah, otherwise we're just kind of waiting for football season to start. And with that in mind, we've kind of been going through here for you on Pack-A-Day the top 10 units that the Packers are going to face this season. And Jason, what we have is, because since we have our group was a little bit more difficult just because offensive line is a unit, whereas wide receivers are individuals. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the 10 best teams that they play, that we feel for the offensive line. We have a point system that we kind of helped use to narrow those down. And at the end, we'll decide who the best one is of those 10 teams, that we mentioned earlier. So the first team on this list that we have is the Philadelphia Eagles. And the Eagles had a productive offseason as far as their offensive line goes. They added Andre Dillard, which was one of Andy's favorites here early in the NFL draft. They still have Jason Peters. They still have Lane Johnson. Jason Kelce is still around. They have a very good unit in front of Carson Wentz. And Jason, that's going to be a big thing when the Packers and Eagles face off, because Carson Wentz has been so banged up in the last two seasons. They need to keep him upright. So, I mean, when you look at the Eagles right away, what sticks out to you about their offensive line?
Well, like, it's what you mentioned. They've got some really good veterans that are part of that line. You know, an interesting story about Stefan Wisniewski. He thought he was out of town and done with the Eagles and was posting on Instagram, and he was waived, but he was signed a day later. This was back in March. And it was just kind of an interesting story because he was telling everybody, okay, bye, Eagles Nation. It's been a blast. And he was kind of bummed about that. And then one day later, he's re-signed. It was kind of like what the Packers did with A.J. Hawk, where they cut him and they re-signed him to a more team-friendly deal. But, yeah, Jason Kelce at center, Jason Peters, they've got a lot of really good veterans on their squad. Now, last year, and yeah, I mean, it was tough to rank these. But last year, the Eagles were very average, both in run and pass blocking. So nothing really stood out there. You never know what's going to happen from year to year. It's kind of like this year with the Packers getting Brian Bulaga back. Is he going to be great? Is he going to play well? Is he going to stay healthy or not? lot of question marks. So the adding of Dillard is only going to fortify that line. Dillard was one that was connected a little bit to the Packers. There were some that had him mocked in round one. So I can't say that they didn't boost themselves. And so they're ending up at number 10 on this particular ranking. And Jake, I don't know if you want to break down the reasoning behind the rankings. I have a feeling that by the end of the season, the Eagles definitely are not going to be the true 10th best offensive line that the Packers will see this season.
No, and that's why there's kind of some room for discussion here. And something strange about the Eagles, to where I would probably rank them a little bit higher, were we able to do that, is because they have between Joseph Atai, Andre Dillard, Lane Johnson, Jason Peters, they have four legitimate starting tackles on their roster. Most teams don't have two. I mean, you've seen the last couple of years, the Packers, when Brian Bulaga goes down, it's not like they have another guy just in tow waiting. They've struggled through some of the issues with Jason Spriggs, Don Barclay, all the way back to Derek Sherrod, and just so many others. And it just hasn't worked out well. So that's an interesting thing to go through with the Eagles. The next team on the list is actually one of their NFC East rivals, and that's the Dallas Cowboys. And the Cowboys, a couple of years ago, looked like they were recreating the Great Wall of Dallas, but they've had some health issues. Travis Frederick was banged up last year. Zach Martin was banged up last year. Left tackle Tyron Smith had some injuries. They have some issues as far as health, but honestly, as long as they're healthy, this is a very good unit. And with Zeke Elliott running behind them, I know some people have speculated that Zeke is just a product of that offensive line, and that's nonsense. He's a special running back. Dak Prescott makes things a little easier on them by being able to move. That can be a blessing and a curse. So in kind of your point rankings that you were talking about earlier, the Cowboys ranked lowly, very lowly, in terms of pass blocking. But they were top of the league in terms of running the ball and run blocking, which shouldn't come as a surprise. They just kind of lean on you as the game progresses. And the Packers are, I mean, that's something where the Cowboys are a big physical offensive line. And they really, I mean, they've dropped off a little bit since 2015, Zeke Elliott's rookie season, replacing a few guys. Lyle Collins hasn't worked out like they thought. Connor Williams hasn't worked out quite like they thought. But they have a lot of good players. And Jason, this is a formidable group that the Packers are going to face off against here in, I believe, the game's in early October.
Yeah, it will be. If they're healthy, the Dallas Cowboys have had a good offensive line for a long time, and I don't think that's going to change a ton. You know, another thing that leads to some of these grades in terms of run blocking and pass blocking is how long does it take your quarterback to release the ball? So last year, Dak Prescott took an average of 2.82 seconds to throw. That's high when you look at NFL averages and you go around the league. Aaron Rodgers came in at 2.95 seconds. We all know he held onto the ball a lot. But, you know, as I look through some of these rankings and I look at the time to throw, there's no surprise that some of the teams that fared best in pass blocking in terms of their offensive line grade also had a quarterback that had a tendency to get the ball out quicker. So, you know, Dak Prescott's going to have something to say, and all these quarterbacks are going to have something to say about how the offensive lines perform. And then the mobility of the quarterback also comes into question. Obviously, when you're blocking for somebody like Russell Wilson, it's a different story, or Cam Newton, it's a different story than if you're blocking for a Tom Brady, who is a statue and also tends to get the ball out real quickly, just as a comparison there. So, you know, yeah, not a lot of offseason moves for the Cowboys, but if everybody comes back healthy, like you said, Jake, yeah, I mean, they're definitely not the ninth best. You know, they just happen to grade out that way in this particular case.
Next team on the list, actually the next three teams, oddly enough, are the Packers' divisional opponents. So let's kind of lump them all together: the Bears, the Vikings, and the Lions. The Lions grade out the highest. The Vikings' offensive line certainly has a reputation as a team who struggles, and it's something that they've earned because they've frankly been horrendous. The Vikings have, and they addressed their offensive line in the draft. Garrett Bradbury was somebody that they picked early. But the total, you know, as a whole, they've spent some money on that position, and they just haven't been able to make the necessary adjustments to protect Kirk Cousins. And they got a lot of not before Kirk Cousins, it was Sam Bradford. So you've got guys, you know, rushing up the middle against quarterbacks that struggle with interior pressure. It's a recipe for disaster for some of those teams. And I think that, you know, the Vikings are a team. They made the list because, guys, there's 16 games. There's 13 different opponents. You know, ranking the top 10 of those guys specifically is a little different. So I think that, you know, the Vikings are probably due to struggle a little bit again this year, and I think that'll be a detriment to their team ultimately. And that was something that hurt them throughout last year. If you ask me what their Achilles heel will be, I think that's what it would be. The Bears and the Lions, I think, both have above average units. I think that, you know, the Bears have, with James Daniels there at the guard spot, Kyle Long, when he's healthy, has proven to be very good. Their tackle position does leave a little bit to be desired. They haven't really been able to fortify that. They have some good players, but I wouldn't say that they have anybody great at those positions. And the Lions, it seems like, you know, we're talking about different guys every year for them, you know, starting with they have a first-round pick like Taylor Decker. Something I think that'll help their offensive line is TJ Hawkinson, their first-round pick. He's essentially a sixth offensive lineman when he's an inline blocker, so that'll help. Jason, what's the state of this, and how confident are you that the Packers will be able to win in the trenches against their divisional opponents? Because that's three teams that I just mentioned that have made this list.
Well, they're both ranked kind of in the middle, so I'm not that concerned. If you consider the defensive line played well for the Packers last year, Kenny Clark's only one more year stronger in his all-star, all-pro status in terms of what he can do. And then, you know, you add the pass rush that they brought in this year in the free agent Smith brothers, and then you have Rashawn Gary, their first overall pick, to that mix. I think the Packers can make some noise. I mean, the Bears didn't do a whole lot this offseason, so you're looking at largely the same unit that they had last year. They didn't run block very well, and they let Jordan Howard go. You know, he's gone. He was traded away. So it's Tariq Cohen, and he's a little more of a gadget back than a true running back, so I'm not sure that that's going to help that run block grade. They graded very well in pass blocking, and if Kyle Long is healthy, you know, that's going to help. But again, they're on the average side. The Vikings made a ton of noise. They did a lot this offseason. They used their first overall pick on Garrett Bradbury, who I think is going to be a very good offensive line, so they helped themselves there. They brought in a couple of free agents, nothing too notable there. On the interior of the line there, Josh Klein and Dakota Dozier. They used two other draft picks on offensive linemen, fourth round and sixth round. So those players are always a little iffy. You never know if, you know, fourth through sixth are going to be impact players or not when drafted. But they lost Nick Easton, Tom Compton, and Mike Remmers. And again, these are guys that didn't play very well anyway. So, the Vikings may have improved by swapping out the players they did. The Lions graded out well last year, but, you know, Matt Stafford got the ball out pretty quickly, 2.63 seconds. TJ Lang retired from the Lions. You know, we love TJ. He's a former Packer, but I think that was a good thing for the Lions, and it's a good thing for TJ as well. They'll fill the hole there. They brought in a couple of free agents to fill in the gap there. So, you know, I think by the end of it all, it's going to be interesting to see what the Bears' offensive line looks like with Mitch Trubisky in year three. Does he level off a little bit? Does he continue? He's a little bit more mobile. And then in terms of the Vikings, are all these moves going to pay off? I mean, they swapped a ton of guys out, so it's going to be an entirely new crew for quarterback Kirk Cousins, who's, you know, pretty average. So from a Packers standpoint, I don't have a lot of concerns. You know, and again, we've got them basically ranked from worst to best. Bears, Vikings, Lions, and for those of you curious, the Packers would have graded better than all three, and there's obvious reasons for that. They've got a great tackle tandem, and then the interior of their line is very solid as well. If you consider Corey Linsley, and we assume Billy Turner is going to take over right guard, the NFC North is looking pretty good in terms of the Packers' situation. I think the biggest thing to watch will be the Vikings. Can they finally improve it after 2 years of that being, like you said, Jake, their Achilles heel?
Next team on the list is a team from San Francisco with a group of players that are going to be relatively similar to that of the Packers, and that's because the Packers head coach is the protege of the 49ers head coach, and that's Kyle Shanahan. We saw the Niners offensive line firsthand. Obviously, the rock on that team is Joe Staley. He's been one of the best left tackles in football for quite some time. And I don't see – I know there's some age, obviously, there. But something that I find interesting about them is just they run outside zone just like the Packers do. This will be one of those games of, like, mirror images between the two teams just because they're so similar. And, you know, the Packers are going to run a lot of the same stuff that the 49ers do. And they do that because, like I mentioned, they have the same head coaches. So that is something that's interesting. The next team on this list, and it's a big one because they rank so well on the offensive line and they have arguably the best quarterback in all of football, and that is the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs were very solid up front last season. Jason, you can go through the specifics here when I kick it over, but that's something where Patrick Mahomes is hard enough to deal with, and their weapons are good, and their running game was good last year, even without Kareem Hunt once he was jettisoned from the team. That's terrifying to think that Patrick Mahomes could have that much time to throw in an NFL season. You know, it almost seems like when somebody's that good, it's almost like football karma has like an equalizer to it. It's like, oh, you're a great quarterback, or you have this offense. Like the 2011 Packers, for example, have an offense that scores a million points. And the equalizer was the fact that their defense stunk, which was strange because their defense was so good the year prior, and it didn't carry over to the next year. Kind of like that with Mahomes. I guess the equalizer for now is that we don't know if their defense is any good, but on the offensive side of the ball, if he's going to be protected, they're going to score a lot of points. So, Jason, tell me about the Niners and the Chiefs.
Okay, so in terms of these two teams, the Niners, not a lot of offseason movement, and I had to go back to 2017 to look at Jimmy Garoppolo's time to throw because he missed most of last year due to injury. 2.75 on the higher end of that, so he definitely needs more time and more protection. So he didn't play last year. You know, that the Niners ranked as well as they did with quarterbacks who, you know, probably wouldn't start for a lot of teams. Says maybe they're a little bit of an underrated unit. You've got all rookie Mike McGlinchey at right tackle. You mentioned Staley. He's getting up there in age, but that experience is probably still coming in handy. It's why offensive linemen tend to play longer than skilled players do in their career. So, you know, I think they're probably going to be a one that might give the Packers a little more trouble than we think in terms of their pass rush, you know, but we'll see. And then as far as the Chiefs go, yeah, I mean, the Chiefs are going to be a really interesting team. There's going to be a lot of eyes on them anyway because of the Mahomes situation. You know, one thing that I think was reported is that Patrick Mahomes, if you follow the Chiefs, there were a lot of balls that he threw that may have and could have been intercepted but weren't. And so he could have easily had more picks than he did, and I don't know if that changes the outcome of some of their games, but there's no questioning his incredible skill set. And all the comparisons that have been drawn so far, you know, putting him in the Hall of Fame and comparing him to Brett Favre, I think is a little hyperbolic at this point. But the Chiefs already have two pretty good tackles. I guess it depends on how you see Eric Fisher. I mean, Fisher was the first overall player taken in the 2013 draft. He plays left tackle. I don't know if he's necessarily great. I mean, I don't think you look at him and say, wow, he was a great first overall that year. But he's still manning the left tackle. But on the right side, you've got a first-team All-Pro and right tackle in Mitchell Schwartz. So on the ends there, the Chiefs are protected. You mentioned giving Mahomes time to throw, and he needed it. 2.91 seconds. He was second to Aaron Rodgers on this list. So he had the second highest time to throw. And, it, you know, he tends to move around, and he's also looking to make bigger plays. And the other key to that, too, is who are his weapons going to be this year. There's still some question as to whether or not Tyreek Hill is going to return to the Chiefs. So that remains to be seen, and who else is there. So on those two, we're starting to get towards the top of the list. So the Chiefs, an up-and-coming team, a quarterback that's, you know, conceivably going to take a jump this next year, if nothing else. Even if he plateaus, the Chiefs are still going to be a really, really good team. And you've got a fairly decent offensive line. So that Chiefs game, I believe that's – is that a Sunday nighter, Jake?
It is, yeah, end of October.
That's going to be a lot of fun to watch because you're going to have two really good teams and two really good trench units going after each other.
and it'll be sold as Aaron Rodgers against Patrick Mahomes. We don't have to pretend that that's not going to happen. So next team on the list is the Carolina Panthers, and that's an interesting one to me just because typically, and, you know, I get it, narratives drive things. There are narratives for almost everything, and a lot of times they're not true. So that just kind of makes things a little bit interesting is all. The Panthers have a unit that is kind of a list of no names. I don't mean that to be disrespectful. It's just kind of how it is. Taylor Moten, Greg Van Rotten, Trey Turner, Darrell Williams are your tackles and guards. They have Greg Little, who they drafted in the second round just this past year. But protecting Cam Newton, especially this year, is going to have to be priority number one just because he's coming off a shoulder injury that was pretty significant, and they're talking about, you know, the difference in him throwing the ball and all that sort of stuff. The Panthers just – I just think that's interesting to watch. They have a very good group of skill players. DJ Moore, I think, is a good player. Christian McCaffrey, obviously, is one of the best players in all of football, honestly. Fantasy football players such as myself love him for obvious reasons. So that's an interesting one. The Los Angeles Chargers, and I did that almost at the risk of calling them the San Diego Chargers because I tend to do that almost all the time. It's hard to remember that that is where they are at this point in time. But protecting Phillip Rivers, Russell Okung was out there. He was his own agent for a while, which was goofy. Dan Feeney was a draft pick. They have Mike Pouncey, Michael Schofield, and Sam Tevy. And again, we were talking about how dangerous Patrick Mahomes is, but Jason, Phillip Rivers is also very dangerous if he gets protection, and it sounds like that he's got a very good offensive line unit to keep him protected.
Yeah, he does. And Rivers is just, you know, he's still around, slinging it with his awkward arm angle. So you can't really knock it. On the Panther side of things, you mentioned the tackles, and they've got, you know, some fairly solid guys that nobody's really heard of before. Longtime center Ryan Khalil retired, and he was replaced by by Matt Paradis, who came from another team the Packers will face this year in the Denver Broncos. So the Broncos lose their veteran center, and he goes to the Panthers, and the Panthers gain their veteran center. And you mentioned Little in round two, so they're trying to fortify that line. And you know, supposedly Cam Newton is looking to change his throwing mechanics this year. I have no idea what that's going to impact in terms of his time to throw. Last year it was 2.69, which is about average, maybe a little bit above average in terms of time there. And that obviously is, you know, the more time it takes to throw, the more you're asking of your offensive line. But Carolina added a bunch of guys for depth in their offensive line. They drafted a second offensive lineman in round 6-2. So, again, iffy whether or not that guy plays or is even on the roster. But not too bad. And then the Chargers were really the only team on this list who pretty much have everybody coming back from last year, and it's pretty much the exact same unit. So they played really well. They graded out fifth best in run blocking, 13th in pass. You know, Rivers, 2.62 seconds to throw. All that equates to a really good situation for the offensive line. And with Denver losing their center, even though they graded out best of all the teams last year, I think San Diego, by the time it's all said and done this year, the LA Chargers, they could very well be the top unit once everything grades out and all the dust is settled.
You mentioned it, the last team is the Denver Broncos, who the Packers play early in the year. And again, that's just interesting just because it wasn't that long ago that that was a really, really bad unit. John Elway has done some work. I mean, granted, Elway's had done plenty of things that have made him deserving of being made fun of as the general manager or the president of football operations that he is. But he has rebuilt the offensive line, and to give him some credit, if he sees a weakness, he does attack it relatively aggressively, which is something he's done since his time there in Denver, which is probably why their salary cap situation was the way that it was. But they don't hand out trophies for having the healthiest of salary caps. So that part's been interesting. The Packers will play the Broncos early in the year. The Broncos are obviously transitioning with a few things. They have a new head coach. Drew Locke might be their starting quarterback by the time Denver gets into Green Bay. That was it's early in the season, so that would be a little surprising if they gave up on Joe Flacco that early. But quite frankly, Joe Flacco is terrible, so that wouldn't surprise me if that were the case of what to happen. So, Jason, we've been through the 10 teams. We've gone through a grading and a point system. So essentially what we did was, you know, run blocking and pass blocking where they ranked last season, threw some analytics at you, and kind of ranked them as such. But when it's all said and done, at the end of this season, which team do you think you'll go back and say, man, that was a tough offensive line that we had to face that year, assuming relative health?
Well, if I look at everything here and all that's gone down, the team that stands out the most, that's the easy, low-hanging fruit answer, is the Chargers, because they've got the same guys coming back, so you can expect them to grade highly again this year. I mean, they finished second, but, you know, Denver losing their starting center, you know, they added Juwan James, and he's the highest-paid right tackle in the league now, and they drafted Dalton Reisner, so they could very well make a, you know, hold on to that number one spot as well. I think it could be the Chargers, but the team that I think has the chance to make the biggest improvement based on what they've done and the focus they've tried to put on their offensive line, you know, we may not want to hear this, but it could be the Minnesota Vikings. The Vikings might find themselves maybe a top five if everything plays out well and these players that they've added max out.
That's an interesting one. Obviously, continuity matters something in terms of the – like, the, for example, the best Packers offensive line that they've had in recent memory was in 2014, and that was because T.J. Lang, Josh Sitton, Corey Linsley, David Bakhtiari started all 16 games, and I believe Brian Bulaga started either 14 or 15 that year. So they had the continuity that was necessary to keep everything together. So since they were able to do that, that was their best offensive line unit in that given point in time. With the teams that we have this coming year on the schedule, the Dallas Cowboys are definitely a team I think that jumps out. Man, there's definitely some reputation that goes into that. But the, you know, the Packers have struggled with the Cowboys in recent memory and their running game. And like I mentioned, Zeke Elliott makes that offense. It's very similar to how a really good quarterback can make your receivers better. A really good running back can make your offensive line a better run blocking team. Zeke sees things. He's a very gifted player, assuming he's in shape and not in trouble. So that's a positive thing for the Packers here in – or excuse me, for the Cowboys in 2019. The Broncos are another team, like you mentioned. Dalton Reisner's on that team now. Garrett Bowles is a very good player. They've added some guys. They've been relatively aggressive for the most part with rebuilding that offensive line. So they've done a good job. The Chargers are another team. The Vikings, I don't share the same sentiments that you do about them, but I think the Eagles are another team that I think could be very good along the offensive line. I think the Eagles are just like a really good organization at this point in time. They do things really well. They're a well-coached team. Doug Peterson, for my money's worth, is the best coach in the NFL, not named Bill Belichick. So that's a pretty lofty praise considering some of the other guys that are in the NFL, guys like Sean McVay, Sean Payton, some other guys. But I would take Doug Peterson. And the Eagles, I just think, like I mentioned earlier, you know, the idea of being able to have four legitimate starting options at tackle is crazy to me that they're able to do that. So that'll be something to keep in mind when they play the Eagles on Thursday night. So, Jason, going through all these teams, we just did that. These are the teams the Packers will face. But let's look at it from the inside now. How confident are you in the Packers' offensive line, their depth, their starters, everything here in the next, this upcoming season, that they'll be able to perform well enough as a unit?
I'm encouraged because they finally addressed what they needed with guys that are proven that they're going to be better than what they've had. Byron Bell was a miss last year. I think we were more excited about him when he was signed than what we saw on the field. Lane Taylor, I think, will be fine this year. There's mixed reviews on Taylor at left guard, but at the tackle positions, given if Bulaga's healthy, they're going to be in really good shape. Corey Lindsey's a really good center. He should have been in the Pro Bowl last year. He wasn't. So they've got definitely a good solid starting five. Depth-wise, I think they're in better shape as well. Billy Turner can kick out the right tackle if he has to. We still don't know what – in terms of it, at guard, you know, we still don't know what Cole Madison is going to bring, if he's going to be able to provide any of that depth there. Jason Spriggs is still in the mix. He's never going to be great. He's always going to be inconsistent. So it just depends on how much any of these role players are going to have to be counted on and are going to have to play. That can be said for any of these teams on this list. I mean, you know, any of the teams at the top of it could very easily fall to the bottom if they suffer a tough injury to one of their guys. It's the same story in football. It's all about health. But as far as depth goes, I think Green Bay is looking pretty good. If they were part of these rankings, they would have come in just in front of the 49ers and just behind the Kansas City Chiefs. So that gives you an idea. I would have put them sixth on the list of all the teams that they're going to face if you include themselves in there. So that's not a bad place to be. I only see it improving, not going the other direction. So, you know, that's reason to feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. You know, on paper, obviously, everything changes if David Bakhtiari, knock on wood, goes down with an injury, just because, I mean, who replaces their left tackle in the middle of the season and feels really good about that? I know the Packers did it Bakhtiari's rookie season, but David Bakhtiari hasn't always been David Bakhtiari. There was a time that us fans were on these podcasts and talking about how the Packers might need to replace David Bakhtiari, or that Jason Spriggs was drafted to replace David Bakhtiari, or that Bakhtiari was going to play guard, or just that was always ridiculous to me personally. But I know that was discussed for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, if he's healthy, if Brian Bulaga is relatively healthy, obviously that means, you know, you're looking at anywhere from 12 to 16 games out of Brian Bulaga. Realistically, those two, if they're healthy, I think the Packers have a very good tackle tandem, obviously. On the interior, you mentioned Corey Linsley. He's very good. And their guards, that's really where I'm watching this year. Guard play last year was horrendous, quite frankly. Byron Bell was bad. Justin McCray was not good. Lane Taylor was injured and ineffective. So you're hoping that Lane Taylor is healthy. Elton Jenkins will be in the mix, obviously, at some point. Billy Turner will probably play right guard this year. We'll see if that's the case for the future. But for this year specifically, the starting five, I think, feels pretty good. The depth on the interior, Elton Jenkins is a top 50 pick. And then you've got a bunch of guys like, you know, Lucas Patrick, Alex Light, Cole Madison, Justin McCray. There's competition for those backup spots, and it's quality for the most part. Like you said, we don't know what Cole Madison brings, and I still tend to believe he's more likely to be cut than he is to make a significant impact. But it's possible that he makes an impact. They felt highly enough about him to draft him in the fifth round. So that usually has worked out pretty well for the Packers. So we are out of time for today's show. Be sure to check out the Packaday Podcast on Twitter. It's at Packaday Podcast. Check us out on your favorite podcast app. You can follow me on Twitter personally. I'm at Jacob Westendorf, and you can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. It's getting closer, guys. We're getting to training camp. We had the offensive line today, the Hogs. So tomorrow I look forward to hearing about the defensive line and what everything transpires as far as those things. So thank you guys, as always, for listening. And, of course, go Pack, go.
Third and six, trailing 30-23, 2 minutes straight up to go in the game. San Francisco showing a blitz through the A-gap, and here they come. Rodgers looking, throws left side of the end zone.
Yes! Yes! Devontae Adams, left corner of the end zone from Aaron Rodgers. 16-yard touchdown pass, the Packers an extra point away from getting this game tied.
Beathard on third down and three in the shotgun. Football to the 46 at Green Bay. Packers showing a blitz, and here they come. Beathard looking, hit as he throws it. Deep down the right sideline. And an intercepted on the play. Spectacular interception by Kevin King at the 9-yard line of Green Bay. Snap to Rodgers, looking right. Throws the right side. St. Brown makes the touch. Nice reach. Oh, he reached back to gather it in, using all 6'5 of his frame. Tumbled out of bounds inside the 30 of the 28-yard line. Snap to Rodgers, looking downfield, throws the left side. Devontae's got it out of bounds inside the 10-yard line. Oh, my goodness, what a throw and catch. Again, they beat Maven down the left sideline. Hunter Bradley the snap. J.K. Scott down on one knee. Arm extended. Here it is. Placement made. Kick is up. It is good.
It is good.
Mason Crosby delivers the dagger. One week after his worst day ever, he delivers the dagger tonight. And the Packers win 33-30.
We'll be right back.